Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
We're going to speak about one of a few of your experiences.
So we're going to talk about onboarding. We talk about, you know, the best foot forward and how to be organised and things like that. But the reality is, and you've touched on it there, is there are legal requirements that we need to get to. So there's the nitty gritty and the boring stuff that we've got to get to before we can get to, you know, a fancy pants onboarding process.
Yeah. Rushing things when you're onboarding people can lead to not checking information, like missing steps.
Particularly since COVID in the bigger firms, you know, there is more of a focus on work-life balance.
Yeah, absolutely.
And more people are demanding it.
We're back in the studio, episode 9 of the podcast, the HRER podcast, I should say.
Being 9 episodes in and you don't know the title yet, Ollie. Are you the right co-host? I'm questioning my choices here.
I don't know. I question that every day. I'm riddled with imposter syndrome. What can I say? Episode 9, somewhat of a different format today.
Yeah.
Because we're going to speak about one of a few of your experiences.
So we're going to talk about onboarding.
Yeah.
And I do have a couple of personal anecdotes about experiences that I've had through onboarding. Somehow this now feels like a therapy session where I'm talking about my
experience. You're on the couch.
I'm on the couch.
But to make yourself more comfortable.
You know, I mean, they were, at the time, maybe one of them was a little bit traumatic.
Yeah.
But certainly in terms of my approach then with clients and how I advise on onboarding and, you know, for how we've built the system, a lot of it stems from my own experience because I've had some pretty unusual onboarding experiences, shall we say.
This was earlier in your career.
Earlier in my career. when I was a junior. Well, one when I was a paralegal and one when I was a junior lawyer.
We spoke a little bit about, in the office, about like the environment you worked in. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I painted it as like very Wall Street skyscrapers. You get a takeaway delivered at 6 o'clock at night because you've still got work to do in the office.
So 6 o'clock would be far too early, but yes.
Okay.
So no, I have worked in corporate, what we call big law.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely nothing like suits. I'm hoping you watched that after the Friends discussion in the last episode.
Seen two episodes. Harvey Specter?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, big law where you've got the big offices, you know, there's big budgets. So where one of the firms I used to work, if you work past 10 o'clock at night, you could expense takeaway that would be delivered to the office.
Past what time, sorry?
10 o'clock. In the evening, okay. Night time.
And you're starting at what time?
I'd usually be in the office about 7:30 in the morning. And if you worked past midnight, you could expense taxi home.
Oh, that's just
so the firm I worked painful. For didn't have the beds that some city firms do, but that was where I sort of started out my career.
You could sleep at the office?
Oh, yeah, there's lots of firms where you can sleep at the office. And look, you know, there's lots of benefits that come with it. The pay in those firms is often much better. The facilities. So when you look at city firms now, many will have on-site restaurants, on-site gyms. You know, the medical cover is all excellent.
Mm-hmm.
But the price you're paying for that is your time. You are.
It has
you,
to be
you
know, excellent.
You are there for a considerable portion of your life. And I remember when I was a student and I was the president of the law society at university, of course I was, we used to go around law firms looking for funding for the law society, usually to pay for our law ball, which cost an eye-watering amount of money for all the law students to get drunk once a year. And I remember going to one of the city firms and I was talking to a trainee who had just bought a house in a flat in Kensington. I said, oh my goodness, that's amazing. You know, it's the start of your career. You've just bought a house in Kensington. What's it like? She goes, well, I haven't really unpacked yet. I said, oh, how long have you been there? She went, well, 6 months.
What's she been?
She's been in the office. She's been working.
And she's not unpacked
so
any
it's
clothes.
The work-life balance that's not missing. So I think things are changing. There is, particularly since COVID in the bigger firms, you know, there is more of a focus on work-life balance.
Yeah, absolutely.
And more people are demanding it. You know, the old corporate's kind of approach doesn't necessarily fly with the graduates who are coming out now who are expecting more of a balance. But then there are still firms that stand by it, they're proud of it. And if you go there, you are going and expecting it. You know, it's not hidden in any way.
It's the culture, isn't it?
And for me, I wanted more balance, which has meant, you know, I haven't always stayed in one firm. I have experienced a number of different work environments, mm-hmm. which leads us very neatly, I suppose, onto onboarding, which means I have experienced onboarding in several different environments and done in several different ways.
Yeah, and leads us greatly, well, leads us well into the example we discussed prior. There was a library involved. Was it a library?
Yeah. So the firm's going to know exactly who they are, and I'm still on very good terms with them. And it's something that myself and the now managing director can laugh about over a coffee or a beer, is when I started at the firm, I had been through an interview process. So I'd had two interviews and my start was actually delayed because I'd fallen down the stairs and broken my coccyx. So it wasn't, you know, sort of rushed in through the door. I was sat at home very painfully for 2 or 3 weeks before I was able to drive and go to work. And first day in the office, I was ushered through from reception very, very quickly by my then line manager, mm-hmm. who the library came second. Put me in an office and said, look, we'd like you to stay in here.
All day?
All day, and sort of, you know, limit your interaction with people if you wouldn't mind. I was like, well, what on earth's going on? So, but the person that you're here to replace hasn't been fired yet.
Oh, okay. So you're a secret.
So I was at this point secret.
Yeah.
Partway through the day, this irate lady comes into the office and asks who I am and what I'm doing sat behind her desk. And they'd put me in the office of someone that they thought wasn't in that day. And it turned out she was. Following which, I was then ushered into the firm's library. And I worked from there for 2 weeks.
On your own?
On my own. Which, you know, sole working as a lawyer is not necessarily the end of the world. But I was essentially hidden away until this other employee.
And everyone else, I imagine, was part of a team environment?
Yeah, in team environments. I was hidden away until this other person could be dealt with. As I say, now it's a story that I can dine out on. It's hilarious. But at the time, I'll confess, I was thinking, where on earth have I come to work?
I bet you felt like quite, I would certainly feel quite lonely.
Lonely, but also, you know, you're going into the employment department where...
You expect some better
practice.
There's
an employment issue that hasn't been dealt with. So ultimately the person was, I don't know whether she resigned or ultimately was moved on. And then my presence as being a member of the employment department and the replacements lister was then more widely known.
They let people know you were there.
Yeah. But I'd say as a onboarding process, I would say it's probably an example of what not to do, that there's much better ways of making people feel welcomed, inducted into the firm and get to know their processes.
And they had time there,
had time.
We mentioned a previous podcast, like rushing things when you're onboarding people can lead to not checking information, like missing steps. Mm. And they've had time, because you broke your coccyx, they've had time there to be like, right, we can get this bang on.
Yeah, exactly.
And they just missed the mark completely.
And it's something that when I speak to clients about, it's so common. And particularly
across
businesses generally, particularly professional services, so lawyers, accountants, you know, those sorts of sectors, where you'll have someone turns up on day one and reception are, sorry, who are you? Who are you here to see?
Why are you here?
Why are you here?
Yeah.
You don't have an appointment. Saying you've got someone going, oh, you know, this person's the person I've been speaking to. They ring up and go, oh, yes, you know, they're a new starter. I'll come and get them. So HR aren't necessarily expecting them, or they've forgotten they're coming. They may have a room or somewhere to put them, but then the laptop's not ready. And there's nobody, because they haven't been expecting them, nobody's diaries are available to maybe show somebody around the building, show them where the toilets are, explain the way just kind of the comings and goings of the day in an office work. Mm-hmm. So it's a very sort of unprofessional first impression where you've got someone sat at a desk feeling unwanted, unexpected, and like they're in the way, which is not a great way for somebody to start.
No. And we've all had first days at work, like everyone. The night before your first day at a job is like, historically for me, I'm speaking for myself, it's a bad sleep.
Yeah.
Because you're nervous, like, you don't know what to expect. Like, there's the human factor of people going to be like nice to you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The last thing you want is, oh, I didn't know you were coming. Go sit in the library for 2 weeks and just keep quiet, please.
And I have, yeah, exactly. And I have worked places where, you know, there's been almost a management discussion of, well, we'll have them stationary. They'll have a desk, they'll have a room, and they will have a laptop on day one. As if it's like, you know, you're training for a marathon or something. You know, it's it doesn't need to be difficult. We have sent out the offer letter with start dates. We are in control of that step of the process.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be too difficult to get what we need for people. And there's nothing worse than sitting somebody down at a desk and going, so here's the office handbook. Why don't you read it cover to cover and we'll come back for you in 4 hours? And that screams, we're not ready for you.
Yeah, we've not prepared at all.
We've not prepared.
Your laptop's still with IT.
There's no meetings available for you. There's no one for you to meet because we're disorganised. So here you are, read this cover to cover and someone may remember to come and speak to you before the end of the day. And there is, I would say, in organisations where that is sort of, you know, ringing true, the relief when first day's over and you think, oh, thank God, you know, we've got through the day, the person hasn't left, we feel like we've sort of filled the day out. And what that first day should really look like is they are greeted by a receptionist who is expecting them.
Yeah.
If you have a reception.
Who knows their name.
Knows
little
their name.
Things like that.
And what they're here for. Mm-hmm. If you don't have reception, that there is somebody to greet them when they arrive. That they are then shown where they can go and put their stuff down. So where they can get settled and they've got some space that is their own. They should then be shown around the building. Here's where the fire escapes are, first of all.
Yeah, health and safety stuff. Yeah.
Here's where the toilet is. Here is where the kitchen is and where you can make a cup of tea. And I have a cup of tea story that I'm going to come back to.
Well, we'll bank that.
Introduce them to some people in the department, perhaps, so that they have another familiar face that they can speak to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, John, meet Jane. Jane has worked with us for 3 or 4 years. If you need anything, this is where she sits.
Mm-hmm.
So you've shown them around the building. They've met somebody. They know where they can go to the loo and make themselves a cup of tea. It then might be, right, we've booked you in for a meeting with your head of department and we've booked you in for a meeting with HR and we've booked you in with a meeting with the managing director who's going to talk to you a bit about the business. So their day is structured. They're mm-hmm. learning about, you know, things that they can't find out online about the place. And again, feeling welcome, feeling expected, feeling like there's some structure to the day. In between those meetings, it might be, well, look, here's the health and safety policy. We need you to have a read of this and a GDPR statement
document
to sign.
All the
stuff that if you haven't done it before day one, which obviously because you will have followed our advice and you will already have signed the contract of employment, they will have had it. You'll have done the right to work checks and you'll have done all of that. All that should be left is any policy stuff that's perhaps lingering or some part of induction paperwork, perhaps. So that can be done in between the meetings. So if someone arrives and they've got that sort of structured day, they're going to feel welcomed, expected, and already like they're becoming part of the team.
Definitely. I mean, well, I've got questions here, but you literally just answered the first one, which I can bridge nicely with a stat. So great onboarding can improve employee retention by 82%.
100%. If you turn up somewhere and you don't feel expected or they're disorganized, you think this isn't what I thought it was. And it could mean that actually you think the team is perhaps smaller and they've oversold themselves a little bit, or that they're not used to recruiting. Mm. Which again can be a little bit of a red flag if they're not used to dealing with people and they can't get recruitment and onboarding right. You think, well, what else is going to go wrong?
And what else have they missold me on?
Yeah. It's, you know, everybody puts on their best face during recruitment. The employer wants to appear like, you know, they are the best possible fit for that employee, that they're the right place for their career. And, you know, this is our business does all these wonderful things. And the employee as well. It's a bit like a first date, isn't it? Everyone's got their makeup on and looking their absolute best.
Bring your best self.
Yeah. And by the time you're married, you know, we're not shaving our legs anymore and, you know, cutting our hair and all that sort of, you know, everyone's got very comfortable, haven't they?
Comfort.
So we're in first date territory, aren't we, mm-hmm. when we're at the recruiting
stage.
It's
an interesting comparison there.
Yeah. But for the employer, it needs to carry on a bit longer than the first interview. The first few days, we still need to almost treat like the first date, that we are still putting that structure in the best foot forward because it's the best way to retain people. And recruitment's not cheap. It costs a fortune.
No, cost of recruitment is it's a big factor in my experience in like HRS systems. Like it's an entire sort of field, how you calculate the cost of recruitment, the time spent, the equipment, the human resources.
And even if, you know, you're not using recruitment agencies, which come with their own fees, the management time that it takes to find people, interview people, the disruption that it can cause by putting the wrong person into a team, it could mean that you lose other people. It can't be underestimated, and it's something that we really need to focus on to make sure that we get it right.
Definitely. Like I said, we've done, you've done the first question. It was best HR practices for managing onboarding processes, which you, we kind of just touched on naturally. But the second one, another stat, only 12% of employees feel that their organisation provides a good onboarding programme. What strategies can HR departments employ to personalise the onboarding experience for different roles, levels of experience and cultural backgrounds?
So this is a really good question, because there isn't a one size that fits all.
No.
So what is a good onboarding experience for me could be very different for you. Mm-hmm. So where are we going to get that information from? It's our staff. So we have got this pool of resource of people who have all at some point started with the business.
They've been onboarded.
Yeah, yeah. So that could be a good experience, could be a bad experience, or they may actually go, well, you know what? Okay, here it was all right. It wasn't the worst, but where I worked before, this is what they did.
And this was belter.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's loads of information that we have at our fingertips within the workforce. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we could survey people, we could sit down, have a chat with people. If we've got new starters, we could be taking that feedback from them so they feel heard and they feel valued, that actually we're interested in what their experience was when they started. So the process that I set out inadvertently in response to the first question that you never got the opportunity to ask, you know, that for me is very structured and very organized, but for somebody else, they might feel like they're on a bit of a treadmill. Mm. They may actually just appreciate maybe a quiet corner to sit and read the handbook for 4 hours and make themselves a cup of tea. It may be, depending on the role that they're doing, it could be a very technical role. It could be something that requires them to get their head down and get into a system and become familiar with it very quickly, that actually quiet space is what they need, or that they need somebody sat with them all day to take them through stuff. Mm-hmm. So depending on the role and depending on what the needs of that role are and the individual, we're going to get the idea of a broad plan by talking to our workforce and then have a think about, for particular roles, what they think would be most useful. Because ultimately, they're the people who are doing the job. They know what's the best way to get started at it.
Yeah, they've experienced it before. I mean, we're bleeding over questions here, which is good. Like, it's a natural discussion, mm-hmm. isn't it? You mentioned there, like, getting feedback from employees, and this one's sort of related to that. So how can the HR department measure the effectiveness of the onboarding program? Would you suggest, like, getting feedback?
Yeah, 100%.
Like creating a form or something?
I'd go beyond a form. I would have a sit down with
interview
them.
Sort of thing.
So
informal.
Like, sit down with a cup of tea and say, look, you know, I'd like to talk about how your onboarding experience went. Because I think on a form, there's, I'm going to say this maybe because I'm overly polite. Am I overly polite, Ollie? Do you have to say that because you work for me? I don't know.
I think you're overly proper.
Overly proper. So if I give you a form and ask you to give feedback on an onboarding experience with me, the chances are you're going to go, everything was very good. It was fantastic. Thank you for giving me a job.
Get rid of this form.
There is a tendency to go, oh God, another form. Tick, 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 tick. Yeah. There isn't necessarily a lot of thought that gets applied. Even more irritating is perhaps an online form that won't let you move on unless you've done a certain number of characters, in which case you're just going to fill it with rubbish.
Yep.
The best way to get feedback is sit down with a cup of tea and have a chat with somebody. As you said, you know, we're bleeding through into the next questions because we're having natural conversation. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, we're not scripted, guys. This is all just conversation.
I can't read scripts.
No, we can't. We've learned that. We can't auto-cue.
I'll do it.
But that's the best way to get natural information out of people, is to sit down, have a conversation. And also from a HR perspective or a managerial perspective, it's an opportunity to connect with that individual where we're not necessarily talking about the role. We're not necessarily talking about their history. It's a chance just to have a bit of a chat as well and an early connection with them in those first few days and weeks. And it might be that you can pick up on something either that's bothering them or something that's going on in the workforce that you weren't aware of. So I would say definitely, you know, cup of tea, coffee, whatever your preference, sit down and have a bit of a chat with them and see what that experience was like. And obviously giving them the reassurance that, you know, you want it to be honest.
Yeah.
It's not an opportunity for them to sit there and, you know,
opens up that honest, that trusting relationship as well, doesn't it? Between employer and employer.
And it shows, you know, psychological safety within the workplace. It shows that you're open to discussion, that you're open to feedback. That really does show kind of the best face of the company. If early doors, you are allowing people to have a voice.
It shows you want to improve as a business and that everyone's voices are equal, which is as prevalent as ever. Fourth question, as an employer, another stat, 36% of companies don't have any structured onboarding processes at all. How can HR departments ensure that onboarding procedures are compliant with relevant laws laws and regulations, particularly in industries with stringent requirements.
So we talk about, you know, the best foot forward and how to be organised and things like that. But the reality is, and you've touched on it there, is there are legal requirements that we need to get to. So there's the nitty gritty and the boring stuff that we've got to get to before we can get to, you know, a fancy pants onboarding process.
Yeah.
And most crucial of that is obviously the right to work checks, which is a legal requirement that we have a contract of employment or a statement of particulars by day one of employment, which is a legal requirement, and that for roles that require it, where a standard or an enhanced DBS check is that is done before somebody mm-hmm. starts work. So those are legal requirements. If we don't do that, then we are liable potentially for tribunal awards, financial penalties, or even criminal sanctions. Mm-hmm. So it is super important. It's not just administration. Now, the best way to get all of that done and get it done in a legally compliant way is do it before somebody starts work. Now, this is why we built the system the way that we did. So the Heroes platform was done with not only legal compliance in mind, but making it easy for the employer. So the way these things are often viewed is, well, a contract of employment is a really complex legal document. What if the employee doesn't agree with it? I don't even know where to start. Do I have to pay someone for a template? It's that, well, do we put pen to paper? Do we need to go and get a law firm? So we built a system that generates employment contracts
for you.
So we do 0 hours contracts, short form contracts. You know, they're not big enough to prop open a door with like the yellow pages.
It's all
they
there.
Are straightforward and they're legally compliant. Mm-hmm. So we can issue a contract of employment and they can sign it. We can also do right to work checks. Now, if we have the Trust ID system, where, as you've experienced when you onboarded with us,
I used it myself. Yeah.
Take a selfie, take a picture of your ID, and the check comes back and it's done for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not using the Trust ID, then there's the guidance in there for what documents somebody needs to
so
upload.
Easy to use as well.
It's so easy, and it's just click, click, click through the system, and you know before that person sets foot on site that all your compliance checks have been done.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole point of us doing it was to take away the burden that people associate with those compliance checks before somebody starts. Because what employers really want to be applying their mind to is the stuff that we've talked about, is how can we make someone's experience of starting with us really, really positive?
That's what they should be focusing.
Exactly. That's where we want them to be able to apply their own creativity and their own personality from their company, because the compliance stuff has been taken care of by a system like Heroes.
So now we've done the sort of default right to work checklist, mm-hmm. the grey area that is not very glamorous for people mm-hmm. in HR. What about like the creative stuff? It's not, creativity is not something traditionally aligned with mm-hmm. human resources departments or anyone in that area.
What
are you saying? Yeah, it's got like a, I personally don't think it's that boring.
Yeah.
But people do.
That boring. You
that
didn't
boring.
Say.
I don't think it's boring at all. But it gets that rep, doesn't it?
It does. And I think by having, you know, a way of kind of, like you say, getting the boring stuff out the way,
yeah.
You know, a way of booking those meetings so it's in everybody's diaries and it's all done and dusted, and you think, right, what can we do now to really get to know this person when they get on site?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say from my experience is that everybody will have a story from when they onboarded with you, and they will all have a way that it could be made better. So I'm going to give you my cup of tea anecdote now, because I need to shoehorn it in somewhere and it's not feeling natural anywhere, but I've got to tell the cup of tea story. I've been waiting. So again, big law firm, and I was a paralegal, so it wasn't a trainee. This is when you're sort of out of law school, first legal job. So I was very, very new, very, very young, and very, very terrified, which, you know, you look at me, you don't tend to think terrified, but I was at some point. I was like a shaking little paralegal at some point.
Yeah.
And first day, I was shown into my department, shown where to sit, so all going very well, and I was shown where I could make a cup of tea. So I thought, right, I'm settled in, I'm logged in, and I'd been to like some onboarding session with some other paralegals, and thought, right, I'm going to go make myself a brew. So go into the kitchen. So every part of the building had its own kitchen, and there were no like branded mugs or anything. All the mugs are different.
Okay. Well, guesswork, isn't it? Which
guesswork.
One?
I just thought, well, I'll just pick one. Made myself a cup of tea, went and sat down, and then I'd been given some sort of preliminary work to do, probably fake work because I knew nothing at that point. It's just stuff to, again, you know, kill time until someone can start training you on something. And about 5 minutes later, and my mug of tea is coming to my lips, like I'm doing now if you're watching this on YouTube, and this shadow appears over my shoulder, and it's the head of department.
Did you feel it?
Who, because I am you know, very, very junior, very young paralegal would have no reason to meet this person. Paralegals come and go in large firms and there's lots of them. They're very, you know, my experience there was to some extent that with the much more senior people, you're quite faceless, which isn't a bad thing. They're very big companies.
Yeah.
Head of departments looming over my shoulder. And he says, "What do you think you're doing?" And I said, "Oh, I've got a cup of tea, sir, and I'm just calling you, sir. I said, and I'm getting on with whatever it was I was getting on with
the fake work.
And he said, "I can see that you're drinking a cup of tea." He said, "That is my mug."
Oh dear.
Right. I said, "Oh, I'm very sorry." I said, "I didn't realize that the mugs were personal." It's my first day.
We're stuttering, like,
yeah, it's my first day. Sorry. Sweating, wishing I hadn't worn a silk blouse. I'm very sorry. I said, "Look, you know, I'll finish my tea and then I'll go wash the mug out." To which he said, "No." He said, "You will go and empty it out immediately, wash the mug, and then make me a cup of tea, milk and two sugars."
Jesus.
And walks off. And at which point I was so terrified, I didn't even ask him where he sat.
No.
So I didn't even know where I was going to take this cup of tea.
He told me,
"Empty your cup of tea out and go and make me one," because it was his mug. And to this day, it's one of the questions that I always ask whenever it's my first day. Do you bring your own mug or not?
That's like scarred you.
It's literally, do you bring your own mug? And, you know, when I've been in a position of management, and it sounds so ridiculous, I'll stock the kitchen with plain mugs, branded mugs that anybody can just use. I did that.
I've done it in our office.
And
you have your own mug.
I have my own mug
as well.
Which, by the way, if anybody uses, I will not order you to empty it out and make me a hot beverage.
Stop that evil where it was.
Yeah, but it was a horrible experience. I mean, I do sound like I'm in a therapist chair now. It's a horrible experience. But actually, you know, it's a really, really small point. And where I've worked in other places where perhaps, you know, it's not easy particularly to get lunch nearby. No. I worked in one place where I got public transport in. There was nowhere nearby to get lunch and there was no canteen on site.
So what are you doing?
So I had nothing to eat. And again, it's that sort of knowledge in a perhaps even a quick letter or an email that might come out either from someone in your department saying, "Hi, look, I'll meet you on your first day. I'm in your department. Just so you're aware, there's nowhere to get lunch. Bring some lunch with you. And, you know, we all drink out of our own mugs. So bring your favourite mug in."
I'd be fuming if I'd miss lunch, to be honest.
You would?
I'd be very mad. Yeah. I'd need to eat at certain times of day.
And this makes it sound like I've worked loads of places. I'm kind of making it so it's easier to anonymise for some of these places as well. Nowhere to park. I drove to the office.
Where'd you leave your car? Where did you leave your car?
I went and found a public car park that cost me £30 for the day because I was in a city centre.
Oh, my God.
And then walked half a mile to the office.
And did you get expensed for that?
First day, I didn't want to ask. So again, these sorts of things, well, for someone who's just starting, they're really awkward questions.
Yeah, you don't want to ask because you're rude,
do you? Can you submit expenses on day one? And on that particular day, I wore 4.5-inch heels that I had to trek across the city centre in because I thought I was driving to the office. So look, we don't need to be necessarily breaking things down so that, you know, people aren't using initiative. But actually, if there's some basics that actually could be common queries, maybe we fire it out in a really friendly email to say, "Look, here's someone you'll meet you on your first day. Bring a bit of lunch with you. Or there's a Greggs down the road."
We've done this in my old job, to be fair. We call it the buddy system.
Yeah.
You give someone a buddy like that. He knows what you're doing in your job. He'll know all the bits. I got given one.
Yeah.
I was an usher at his wedding. Yeah. So we're still friends. It ended well.
But my standard onboarding letter that I have sent out, and I believe it's part of the system, is it gives the option for this, you know, is there something that you think people should know on day one? Where do they get their lunch from? Is there going to be someone who's going to be able to show them around? Is there someone that they can ask for if they're not
little
quite sure, you know, what's going on?
Yeah,
because there's nothing worse than walking around feeling a bit lost and not knowing who to ask for. Mm. You know, it's a bit like first day of school, isn't it? And particularly if you're not someone who's full of confidence, it can be quite difficult. So, and it can make the difference between someone feeling welcomed and feeling that actually this has all been anticipated. This is really somewhere where they've got my interests at the heart of what they're doing.
It's thoughtful, isn't it? Like, you've been thought about.
But it sets the tone for the rest of your employment, which is why it's so important.
Absolutely. We've got questions to ask as an employee. We've got three. I'll blitz through them. How can employees safeguard themselves when an employer blames their performance issues on a poor onboarding process?
So this is something that we see fairly regularly, and it brings in the controversial probation process. So for some companies, the probation's falling out of favour. For others, you know, it's still seen as something that's really valuable. And if we are bringing somebody on, but we are not starting them off correctly and we're not training them properly, then to some extent that does lie with us. Unfortunately, during that period, there's very little in the way of legal protection that an employee has. So if an employee turns around and says to the employer, well, it's all your fault, you're probably not going to endear yourself to them, whether you're right or whether you're wrong.
It's not going to end well, is it?
No, your morals aren't going to win you the argument necessarily with every employer. Some might go, you know what, yes, hands up, it was our fault, but unfortunately, operational need dictates that you're not picking things up quick enough. We're going to move you on anyway. Mm-hmm. Even if it is the employer's fault, it doesn't give any legal protection. But from an employer perspective, we don't want to be sat in one of those conversations. We want to make sure that we are doing things properly so that an employee brings their best game as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, I imagine there's nothing better for an employer when someone sort of hits the ground running 6 weeks, they're flying, do you know what I mean? They know what they're doing with everything. And if that's been almost automated as well, like you've not, because you've refined it so well, you've not had to think about it, do you know what I mean? Like in my last job, mine felt very... It didn't feel natural, but it just felt easy.
Yeah.
And like I had my computer given to me. I was told what systems to download, where to look, what to do, what time of day lunch was served, as you've mentioned, little things like that. And it felt very just natural.
Yeah.
That's what you want, I imagine.
Yeah, 100%.
Question two, as an employee, what are effective ways for employees to provide feedback on the onboarding process? We've already sort of covered this.
We have. And I think, you know, it's very hard for an employee who's new if the employer doesn't initiate that feedback process to go, can I give you a bit of feedback on your performance, employer? You're a brave employee that's going to do that.
A bit soon, yeah.
So that really does need to be initiated by the employer. Doesn't have to be. You know what? If you've got the confidence to go and do it and you feel like you've established that relationship quick enough and that the place that you're working, you feel you've got that level of psychological safety to be able to have your say, then, you know, by all means, go and do it. But certainly from an employer perspective, I'd be saying, look, we should be opening those channels of communication because the best way of improving an onboarding process is through feedback.
Definitely. And with regards to like when that feedback's given, have you had experiences when it's been given at different times? So when employees have given it just at the end of their probation, or perhaps they've waited a bit and they've given it 6 months later?
It's usually, Lisa, that an employee is more prepared to kind of give it because they feel they're a bit more secure in the role, particularly if the feedback's going to be negative. But you can have that channel open at any point. Mm-hmm. So you could have HR saying, look, we've got an optional meeting if you want to drop in and give us a bit of feedback. We're not forcing it on the employee necessarily. They've got the option of doing that and maybe perhaps try again a few months later. If an employee doesn't want to, that could be a conversation in itself anyway. Look, we've asked you a bit of feedback on onboarding. You don't seem to want to give it. You know,
Why is there a difficult conversation?
Yeah. Is there a difficult conversation that you think we're going to react badly to? We're really open to it. You know, let's have a chat and see how we can make it better.
It's a culture thing, isn't it, again?
Yeah. Ollie's favourite word.
I love culture. I've been nominating myself the head of culture at Heroes. I'm about that life.
Mm. Is that why you were asking about an ice cream van earlier? Wasn't just me.
Last one for an employee. Are employees obligated to complete their notice period if a negative onboarding experience leads them to believe the job isn't the right fit for them?
So for an employee, they will have to give notice if they want to leave their employment. If you are suggesting that an employer has breached the contract of employment, so the onboarding was so terrible that it's a breach of contract, arguably an employee could resign without notice.
Right.
It's a big kind of, you know, statement to make. It's unlikely that an onboarding process will be so terrible that it constitutes a breach of contract. So in all likelihood, they would have to give notice to leave. It's an ongoing challenge for employers, though, that's particularly in areas like hospitality and care, where there's quite a lot of turnover. Employees will just walk, and you're then reliant on a contractual ability to deduct wages for unwork notice periods where somebody does that. So really, it's kind of, for an employee, the best thing to do is to give notice. You don't want to be burning bridges. If something's not worked out, have that conversation and say, look, this hasn't been the most positive experience for me. I felt that the company's fallen down when it's come to onboarding. I didn't feel welcomed. I don't feel I've had the best start. And actually, my preference is to go and move on somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you notice that I'm leaving.
I mean, in generally speaking, like, I'm going to use like a racing analogy, like a bad start in any sort of race is not is probably the worst thing.
Yeah, it is. And I think it takes a certain kind of company to be able to make that up. So the example I gave of being hidden away in a library for 2 weeks, I worked for that company for 10 years.
Oh, so you turned it around.
And you know what? I had a fantastic working relationship with them. I made friends that I still have. And I think had it not been such great people and such a fantastic place to work, it wouldn't have turned around. It would have been, well...
Did you give feedback on that process? Did you?
I had several conversations about that experience with them. Okay. Because they knew it was so unorthodox and actually, you know, it was, you know...
They weren't right.
It wasn't especially right. But like I say, they did... It was an experience that turned around because I had such a fantastic time working there and actually rose, you know, through the ranks there, and it is going to give away who I was working for because I did have such good experience there. But... That isn't going to be the case for everybody.
No, that's quite a rare case.
I was lucky. It was a fantastic place to work, and that other places that perhaps don't have, you know, that level of positive experience, it's going to be quite hard to make up.
Definitely. I'd say you're a rare case there. I mean, this stage of the podcast is normally where, like, I ask what was the outcome here. We've kind of got the outcome there. Yeah. But I'm going to finish it with a fact. Mm-hmm. We've had loads. So why not finish it with one? 2 in 5 HR managers spend at least 3 hours collecting onboarding information manually, which sounds like a right pig's ear.
That's a lot of time.
That's 7.5. That's like 40% of the average working day, isn't it? They could save a lot of time with a HR system.
So the Hero system onboarding can be done in less than 5 minutes.
That's tried and tested with yourself.
Ourselves and through testing with clients who've been lucky enough to kind of do some beta testing with us, but it's a handful of clicks and it is minutes rather than hours to complete an onboarding process, including a contract of employment and right to work checks.
With the integration with TrustID, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lovely. So you can save some time with that. But yeah, that's a little bit of a different episode today.
Shameless plugging.
It's exhausting, isn't it? Being like,
we're amazing.
We may as well just chuck it straight out there in people's faces at this point, because we are going to market soon with it, aren't we, very soon?
We are. And actually, this was a really important segment for me to do because of where the onboarding stuff has come from, in that it has come from real negative experiences and things that I've been able to then advise companies on. This is how we can do it properly, and this is how we can really make a difference to staff retention, which makes a difference to your bottom line. It's really, really important for businesses. So it's something I feel passionate about, and it's why it features so heavily in the system and why, you know, felt it justified an episode.
Bit of a different podcast. No email from me this time. You saved me the job of that. So I'm going to be lazy with my words and offer you the floor for
parting words.
Yeah, go on, please.
So thank you very much for listening. If you have any HRER horror stories that you would like us to address, please don't hesitate to reach out on our website or on our socials at Heroes. As always, we love your feedback, and if you have any stories that you would like us to solve or even to compare our answer to yours, please don't hesitate to reach out and contact us.
Lovely. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers. We'll see you next time.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media, or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.